Jeg er hjerteløber, og lige nu er jeg ligeglad med, hvem du er.
Ligeglad, om vi er politisk uenige.
Eller om du og jeg kunne blive venner.
For hvis dit hjerte stopper,
er vi forbundne.
Vil du være hjerteløber? Læs mere hos Trygfonden på hjerteløber.dk.
Det er tid til at gå bag om facaden. Yeah! Velkommen til Behind the Vinyl med Darren Edwards og Niklas Müller. My Rock.
Behind the Vinyl, today we're joined by Mr. Billy Sheehan.
Yes, sir. Hello.
Bass maestro. And we're talking about Eat 'Em Smile.
Wonderful. And get the inside and some of the secrets behind the record.
Okay, the inside story.
But going back, I mean, as I understand it, it really started with David calling you to be in that movie that was going to be going crazy.
Yeah, that was a cover story, so no one would know what was really going on.
Right.
Because when I got to L.A., the first thing I did was call Ed Van Halen and invite him out to our show.
Right.
And he said, nah, I'm kind of busy. And I go, yeah, I'm going to have a meeting with Dave tomorrow about his movie. And he goes, what? His what? And I go, I think he's doing a movie. And he asked me, you're kidding me. And he was kind of freaked out. So he said, call me tomorrow as soon as you get back from the meeting. And so I went out to Dave's house. And Dave said, well, there's a movie, but actually, nobody knows this, but I just quit Van Halen and I want to start a new band. And I want you to play bass and we'll find a guitar player and find a drummer. And I said, I always said I would never leave my old band Talas.
Right.
Unless it was for Van Halen. So, David Lee Roth, close enough. I was gone. And so I never called Ed back because I knew if I did, Dave would be mad and I probably wouldn't. So, unfortunately, and I love Ed. I love all the Van Halen guys. And I felt bad. I got caught in the middle there for a minute. But that's okay. It was a great opportunity. And so we went looking for a guitar player and drummer.
But you had been asked to join Van Halen before, or roughly,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ed asked me. Dave backed it up. One time, maybe two times, and then again after this whole situation in more recent times, I went up to Ed's house to jam when they had no lead singer and Dave wasn't back in the band yet.
Right.
So various things. But I love those guys, and even that they even know who I am is a great honor. So that I didn't get to play with them is still the fact that it was ever even mentioned is fantastic.
Yeah, that's one of the, you hear those stories about Led Zeppelin too, how they got people in to come and sing.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it happens. Well, I'm not the only bass player, I don't think. I think they also spoke years ago with Jeff Berlin and with Tim Bogert.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So at some point they were looking at that. But Talas opened up for them in 1980, and I think, and because I was such a huge fan, I was kind of more in line with what the Van Halen vibe was.
Yeah.
You know, as far as the way their lives are not that much intoxicants for me personally, thanks. But nevertheless, but I love those guys, and it's all good.
Did you spend a lot of time with them when you were supporting them? When you were in Talas, did you?
A little bit here and there. They were kind enough to not throw us out. A lot of the opening acts got to leave the building when they're done.
Right. Yeah.
Because they don't want anybody around.
Yeah.
Because it's their privacy.
Yeah.
And you never know, somebody gets in there and starts a rumor or says something, you know, and there's a reason for it. It's not snootiness or ego.
Yeah.
But they were very kind to us. They let us do a bunch of encores. And for an opening act, that was pretty rare.
Yeah.
And really cool. They were great with us. And we really appreciated it.
What? Here's a shot heard round the world.
So David calls you himself? Yeah. David called you himself.
His people call my people.
Okay. And so you see him when you're over there playing with Tullis in Whiskey Go Go, right? You're playing at Whiskey Go Go?
No, we played out of the country club.
Played at the country club, okay.
And so the day before I went out to his house and all this went down. Now I was with my, no, I'm sorry, this was not the country club. It was with at the Palladium opening for Yngwie. On this
right,
particular tour.
Yes.
Sorry, I had that mixed up.
Which is right on Sunset Boulevard, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, crossroad from Amoeba, I think.
Yeah, down the street, yeah. A little bit east, across the street. Now, of course, Dave swore me to secrecy. So here I am with my band doing sound check, and in my mind, I go, well, I just quit, and after this tour, I'm going to fly out to L.A. So sure enough, Dave comes to the show that night.
Oh.
So a couple rumors started floating around already, but nobody knew for sure. But he was great at keeping the whole thing a secret. So I got done with that tour. He flew me out, and we got to work.
Excellent. And you got to work just you and Dave at that stage.
Yeah, we worked on a couple things. He had some ideas from a couple other songwriters. And then Steve Stevens was the original choice for guitar. Mm-hmm. And I know Steve and love him, and he's awesome. I think he was a little bit more deeper in the Billy Idol situation, so he didn't want to leave that, which was wise, I think, because he's great in that band. So I told Dave, I know another Steve. And I just ran into Steve out at a club, out at the Rainbow, and said to him, there's something going on. You might be interested in it. He goes, I think I know what you're talking about. We both kept it a secret. So sure enough, we had him down, and Steve Vai was just perfect because he had the Zappa sense of humor, and he was just a spectacular player, and so that worked out great. And then Dave sent me and Steve out into the wilds to find a drummer. And we found Greg Bissonette, and he was the perfect guy, and there we were. We were off and running.
But what was your connection to Steve Vai?
Were on the same label as Tullis was.
Right, okay.
Relativity Records in New York City. They distributed his stuff, too. So, actually, when his first little solo single came out, the Attitude song, the record company got us together. Maybe we were going to play together or record together, do something together anyway. They thought it would be kind of a cool idea to hook us up. So, and I thought it would have been, too. But fortunately, it happened with Dave, which is a much, much bigger situation.
Relativity, wasn't that Paul Bebo? Do you know a name, Paul Bebo?
No.
No, okay.
No, I was wondering about that whole movie, because that script leaked like last year, I think. So I just printed it out and went through the script. It's a pretty funny script.
Yeah, I have the original copy.
Yeah, but did you read through it back then and get the story of it? Or?
Well, we were, all the clothes you saw us wear on the Eat 'Em and Smile thing and in the video, that was all clothes for the movie.
Right, right.
Because we were in Dave's office at one point. And the movie business is even more cutthroat than the record, if you can believe it. It's even more. So something happened with somebody at the movie company. I think it was Columbia Pictures or something. And there was a little bit of a battle, and they decided that they weren't going to fund the movie. And we were in the middle of all the songs. Basically, were for the movie.
Right.
Going Crazy from the Heat.
Right.
Part of the movie. So, and I remember I said to Dave, you know what? So what? We got great songs. Let's go out on tour. And, you know, and I don't know if he listened to me or had shut me out or whatever. But that was my point of view. Let's go out and do it. So sure enough, we did. Not under necessarily my suggestion. He was probably his plan all along anyway. But so that was cool. So we utilized what we had from the movie and as far as costumes and enthusiasm. But we were all really into it and having a blast. We weren't even thinking too much about the movie. I mean, Dave, he was working his ass off every day.
Right,
working on stuff and casting people and all kinds of things. So when it came to a haul, it was kind of a drag because he put a lot into it. But then we were, as a band, myself, Greg, Steve, and Dave, we would hang out in the basement of his house before, during, and after rehearsing and writing songs. And we had the greatest time ever. On the stage, I'm in a rage, but you are never fooled. Well, I could rock with anyone, but not alone with you. Something starts to burn that deep inside of me. I need a crash of women, knock me on my feet. Shy boy, shy boy, shy boy, shy boy. Shy boy, give it one more time. Boy, you make me nervous. Pulling out
until my personality starts improving. Until my personality starts improving.
I remember you told me, because I interviewed you at Sweden Rock Festival, you told me that you drank leftovers US Festival beer.
Skunk?
Yeah.
US Festival beer. What skunk? That means when it's been around too long, it starts to smell bad. And we would drink the skunk beer and tell stories, and Steve had his Frank Zappa stories, and Dave had his an encyclopedia of brilliant, hilarious stories. Greg, too, and my stories. And we had a riot. And it was really just an incredible group, friendly camaraderie, I mean, like a real band. It was fantastic. Right. Really great stuff.
And you heard the stories about Dave being upstairs and hearing you guys jamming downstairs.
True.
And then running down and saying, hey.
That sounds like a verse. Now give me a chorus here. Yeah, that's a good chorus. Now give me a... And he literally would do that. And, we would come up with riffs and lines, but they weren't songs. I mean, Dave would put them together. You know, he'd say, okay, this is good. That's cool. Let's use that. And then he'd figure out the vocal lines, the lyric lines to it. So he was instrumental in making the record happen and instrumental in the writing.
But what was he, when you were, like, writing songs, was he then, like... Was he playing guitar or anything like that?
No, he would just listen and hang out and, and see what he was kind of producing in a way, pre-producing the record, because he would choose what he felt was good. You know, that's kind of cool. Make it a little more ZZ Top, like a boogie groove. Okay, cool. But speed it up. Okay, and we would do it. And he had great suggestions. Even on the tour, some of Dave's suggestions were legendary. When we started... Steve would do his guitar solo. Pretty cool. Great. I'd do my little bass thingy. Okay, great. But Dave said, it's not working. It's not entertaining enough. You should guys do like a battle where, Steve starts playing, you run over, stop him, he pushes you aside, you play, back and forth. And we did, and people loved it. And it turned something that would be, kind of self-indulgent noodling into an entertaining part of the show, which we had a riot. And we saw a lot of bands copy what we did, too. It was hilarious. That was Dave's idea, make it like a battle at a tractor pull, at a county fair, And so he always had brilliant ideas on things.
Cool. But that's another thing with the album, that the bass is really it's really up front.
Cool.
On the album. And there's a couple, you're doing a couple of solo things in, the Elephant Gun and stuff like that. And that is really cool.
Yeah, it was, and not my doing so much. I was just there I'm being hired to be the bass player. It's not my band. It's Dave's band.
Right,
so I wanted to do what I could to please him. And Ted Templeman was the producer, so it was up to him and Dave. And I was very thankful they left my stuff in, and they left my bass tone on there, and they were cool with that, and cool with Steve. It was a real open, creative thing. Quite wonderful.
How was it to work with Ted Templeman, obviously being a Van Halen fan and him doing the Van Halen stuff?
Well, oddly, Ted, along with all the employees of Van Halen, except for a couple roadies, left with Dave.
Right.
And I don't know what that says, but I do think there was some... some loyalty to Dave.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And I think Ted may have felt that as well. And I don't know the inner workings of the Van Halen situation. And again, I love those guys. I would not say anything bad about anybody in the band. I don't want to ever. But who knows what went on. So Ted came along with us, and the secretaries and the accountants and a lot of the crew guys did too.
Right.
And so we had kind of the whole gang already assembled before we stepped on stage.
En australier og en svensker går ind på en bar, og ud kommer Behind the Vinyl. Behind the Vinyl på My Rock.
Well, baby, I'm easy, I'm easy, I'm easy, I'm an easy man. Well, baby, I'm easy, I'm easy, I'm easy, I'm an easy man. So come on down and get me money while you can. Available, 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 I am free, I am. Available, 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 I am free, I am. Well, I just give him myself, I am yours to have. Come get me, baby.
So going in, can you remember the first songs? First songs you did?
No, I don't remember the. But I do know we did it at Fantasy Studios initial recording, which Mr. Big later recorded in. In our first four records, I think, we did there. We had the same second engineer too, a guy named Tom Size.
Right.
Did the Roth sessions also, and we were in there as a band. You know, playing together. Drums were set up, bass amp was set up, guitar, and we would go through do actual takes of the song, like a real band really playing.
Yeah.
Which is why I think the record had life and soul and the spark and, you know, a depth to it. Then we also recorded at the record plant in New York City, I believe the record plant. Same thing, we recorded all together, same time. And I think we may have done another studio here and there, but I think those are the two main ones. So that was the cool thing about it is we play it as a band, and I think it really reflected on the record.
Yeah, the record still to this day sounds amazing.
Yeah,
cool. You know, yeah, there's a vibe to it.
Oh,
yeah,
absolutely.
There really is a vibe to it. How does it feel now? It's been, what, 33 years?
Yeah.
33
yeah.
years. How do you feel now about that record? You know, 33 is on.
I love that record. I still love that record because it brings back, when you record a record and you listen back to it, you're kind of put in the same circumstance you were at the time. And at the time, the world was, you know, exploding. It was so great. You know, I came in a little podunk Buffalo, New York, and a little band that couldn't get signed, and bang, there I am. You know, my first night to L.A., when Dave flew me in, I left my Ford Pinto, which is a little economy car.
Right.
And sometimes you have a fake tire in the car in case you get a flat tire.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're only supposed to drive it to the service
exactly,
station.
Exactly, yeah.
I drove on that fake tire for 2 years because I'm so broke. So I left it behind, got off the plane, met with some of Dave's guys. They took me, got me settled in an apartment, and we went out on the town, Sunset Boulevard in L.A., me, Dave, and his gang. And we started hanging out, and that night there was paparazzi hanging out, taking photos. They didn't know who the hell I was, but I was standing next to them. And so I went from Pinto to paparazzi in less than 24 hours.
I love it. Talk about the high
lost in loving. I think I hear freedom drumming, it seems. Screaming, pavement's hot, sidewalk's steaming. Only me happens every time, thinking about you and me. Hello, goodbye. Jazz it up or play it slow. It's still the only song I know. It's 2 a.m. and traffic's slow. Listening to the DJ saying, put the storm behind us. When the winds can blow, batter, batter, I don't mind some stormy weather tonight, no. I can feel it. The heat wave blast, kids are screaming, pavement's hot in, sidewalk's steaming. Only me happens every time. Top down, hit the road. Sing the only song we know. It's 2 a.m., traffic's slow. It looks like ladies' night in Buffalo.
Yeah. I got kind of a sense of deja vu. Seen you somewhere before you, huh? So it must have been two other people.
Biggest band in the world back then.
Yeah, we're the biggest band in the world right then, and Dave was the biggest rock star in the world.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing.
But also, I mean, you brought Shy Boy to...
Yeah. Thanks again to Dave. He liked the song, wanted to include it. I said, I'm down with that. He did a great change in the middle, changed the key of the solo to give it a different kind of a lift, which I thought was very good. Because generally for me, a song needs at least three parts, and Shy Boy was still kind of only a two-part song.
Right.
I think if I would have had time and resources, I would have written more into it at the time. But Dave had a great idea. Let's change the key of the solo and then bring it back.
Right.
Which breathed a lot of life into it.
But was that a song that you'd had for a long time? Or?
Yeah, I recorded it with Talas.
You recorded with Talas? Of course you did, yes.
Didn't you record it three times, right?
Three times, that song?
You did it with Talas.
Yeah,
and David Lee Roth.
David Lee Roth. Did you do maybe a live version somewhere?
There's probably 1,000.
I
did it with Steve I did it with Mr. Big, I did it with...
Yeah, did you do it on an official Mr. Big live version or something
like that? We did it there. Well, you know, it was kind of a way, because Mr. Big was kind of an unknown band, so, well, here's a song you might have heard before, you know, that kind of thing, you know. And it was helpful in that respect, but... So I played Shy Boy a lot, and I like the song, but it'd be nice to give it a rest for a while.
what's the favorite songs for you guys? place to play, you know, when you played this? Can you remember? Obviously, the hits were...
We opened with Shy Boy, which is amazing. Right, we played in Buffalo, New York. Everybody's jaw dropped to the ground. That there was the song that he played in the clubs, and now here he is. And pretty awesome, pretty awesome. But the whole record, and we did a bunch of Van Halen songs, too. So, but Ladies' Night in Buffalo had a cool groove to it. And a lot of people liked that live. Going Crazy Live was a blast. Yankee Rose was totally cool.
Yeah.
And we did variations on the Van Halen thing. We did a breakdown in the middle and spread out and stuff like that. And it was such a joy to play that Van Halen stuff. I remember our first rehearsal, and we're in this little Perkins Palace in Pasadena. And, you know, we're just on stage going through the songs, and we're doing I'm on Fire by Van Halen. And I'm taking that high part. I'm on fire. I'm taking the super high note. And Dave's coming over to me, standing over neck. We're singing in the mic, harmonizing, playing. And I realize it suddenly hit me. I'm in a band with David Lee Roth. I mean, it didn't really, you know, sit home until all of a sudden I'm on stage at the mic playing my bass and random guitars, and there he is right there, right up. We're both kind of singing into the same mic, and they go, holy cow, this might work.
Yeah.
Den fikset. Lad os så komme videre. Behind the vinyl på My Rock.
That's the funny thing with the song On Fire, because I remember talking to the photographer for the first Van Halen album, or it was Noel Monk, their manager.
Yeah, I know Noel.
Who said that, because they used to open their shows with On Fire, but on that first album, it's the last song on the album. He always wondered about that. How come? How not kick off with that one?
Sequencing is a kind of an art in itself.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't want to give away the best stuff.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to do your best up front, so you catch everybody. It's kind of it's the same way as editing a movie in many
ways. Yeah.
What scenes go where, kind of a situation like that.
But also there was that Kim Mitchell song.
Yeah, it brought
Was that fully recorded?
I think the music was recorded. I don't think Dave ever did vocals for it. Kids in Action, it was called.
Yeah.
And I loved Kim, and I loved his songs, and I just thought, you know, this is a great piece, and I think it would do really well. Dave liked it. It was another song I brought in that I suggested from Rory Gallagher.
Right.
Secret Agent.
Yes.
Great song.
Yeah, yeah.
What a boogie fast. And I know Dave liked those fast boogies, and he loved it. We never got to that either. So that was cool.
Nice. But also, I'm wondering, a song like I'm Easy,
yeah,
do you think that is the kind of style of music that is like Dave's absolute favorite down deep? That kind of, I don't know, because he's really into that kind of those songs.
Yeah, but he was an elephant gun, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that Dave is smart enough to know that you can't just put an album of screaming boogie.
Yeah.
You need to move around. And like editing a movie, you got to have a love scene and a car chase and, you know, the cops break down the door and a flashback to when he was a kid. You know, all that stuff you need in a movie. So similarly, that's kind of cinematic that Dave would do that in that on the Eat 'Em a Smile record.
Yeah. So also the song, and I just realized, not realized, but I thought of it today listening to the album, the song Big Trouble.
Yeah.
When he's singing, it kind of has like a rap flow or like a hip-hop flow,
a bit of that.
Like he's talking over the music in a way.
Yeah, very
much.
Which
is pretty cool.
Yeah, he kind of, and I know Dave, that's why he went out of the Skyscraper record. He knew that the dance thing was coming in strong.
Right.
And that rock was going to get, you know, a black eye. You know, rock was going to get pushed aside a little bit. Not completely, but pushed aside. So it was very smart of him to try to embrace that. But, unfortunately, when you straddle the fence, the rock guys hate you because you're dance, and the dance guys hate you because you were rock once.
Yeah.
So if it would have worked, it would have been the most brilliant thing in the world.
Yeah.
It would be the king of, and we would all be his subjects. Unfortunately, it did not. But I give him credit for having the courage to take a chance.
Yeah.
For an artist to take a chance when the sure thing is going to guarantee you sold-out arenas and lots of money. But you say, you know what? Let's try something. I got to give him credit for having the guts to try something different. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow.
I quite enjoyed Skyscraper. I thought it was a great record.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not my favorite. Yeah. No, I didn't even listen to it for about 3 years.
Oh, wow. You didn't? Right, yeah.
Wow.
And no offense, I know a lot of people, well, that's my favorite record in the world. And I got, oh, good for you. Thanks for listening.
Well, when did you leave? You left on that tour.
Right after that record.
Right.
Yeah.
Where the record was done, I was out. Okay. And during the recording, it was just not the same. And that's why I emphasize on the Eat 'Em and Smile, we're together as a band. Skyscraper, you know, one, they'd lay down the drums without anyone else there, and then I'd come in and put bass down by myself. And then a week could go by, and then I get another call, and I go in and put bass on something else. And then he wanted to hire studio singers to come in and sing all the background vocals. And I thought, man, I've been singing since that first day I walked up on stage.
Yeah.
And so I got, so I said, you know what? And I found a vocal coach in L.A., and I just started, you know what? I'm gonna sing even better. I'm gonna find a vocal coach. And sure enough, this woman is a great coach, and really, my range increased, my accuracy increased. So thankfully, he changed his mind and brought us in to sing the background vocals in the end.
All right.
Which I was glad at least we got to sing on the record. But it wasn't really that group effort. It was an individual effort. And the mood was darker.
Oh.
It wasn't a fun, friendly, there was no partying, hanging kind of thing going on.
Huh.
And I felt bad. I do think it was the influence of some people around Dave, in my humble opinion.
Right.
But because I know Dave pretty well, and I love the guy, you know, and I think he's a good man. So I do think a lot of people talked him down that dark road.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, the Eat 'Em and Smile tour was a huge success.
We had a riot.
Yeah.
It was a blast, you know. Well, you know, a couple times there were a couple words about a few things here and there, as there is with anybody in any band, but comparatively, almost none.
Right.
Almost none. You know, it was a fun thing.
I always wonder, because you had the stage was just enormous. do you know, because the stage kind of, there's a similarity with the 1984 stage that Van Halen used.
Yeah.
Do you know if he took anything of that?
Well, he used the same guys.
Yeah. I always wondered about that, because it was kind of the same with the amps and the different levels and all that. It kind of looked the same.
Yeah, and the guys that designed that stage kind of created that look to some degree.
Right,
so they just continued it on.
Right.
And I remember I saw there was a Bon Jovi video that came out right around the same time. And as soon as it came on the TV, I thought, oh, great, here's Eat 'Em and Smile. Wait a minute. And then it was a direct copy, not only of the video, but also of the way the stage looked. And, you know. So, but you can't patent something like that.
Yeah.
Everybody's entitled to use it if they want to use it. I, as a bass player, I take from all kinds of musicians. I try to give them credit, though. Try to tell, you know, this is a Stanley Clarke lick that I, you know, kind of tried to learn. And, you know, so I would only hope that somebody would occasionally say, yeah, we were inspired by so-and-so. But that's, you don't have to. There's no law that says you do. So good for them.
Every other inch of you looks like a lady. So don't get caught here.
And how did you feel about playing the with that flair and with that showmanship? Obviously, a little bit different from Talas.
Talas was a pretty wild band. I mean, we flew all over the place, but we had a very tiny stage. Yeah. So you can only run so far. You run for 5 feet, you got to turn around and come back. But on the day of stage, you could run for 50 feet and still keep going. So it was great getting the shackles of that confinement off, where you could just get this big, giant, wide open stage and monitors all over, and you're completely free. So Steve and I, we went crazy. We had a blast with it. So it was fun.
It's crazy.
Do we touch on it now? The big gray elephant, that the reunion show,
right?
That,
yeah,
that nearly happened a couple of years ago.
I was so pleasantly surprised that Dave wanted to do it, and unfortunately, it leaked out.
And
the club blew it. They just let too many people in. Club legally holds about 450. Sometimes they'll let them put 500 or 600 in there, and there was about 1,200 people in there.
Oh, right. Really? Okay.
If an accident or a fire would have happened, somebody would have died.
Yeah.
And it would have been awful. So as much as I was bummed and pissed, the fire department came roaring in with helmets and everything, all their gear, and said, everybody out. We tried to say, well, can we pay the fine? Nope, everybody out. And so we thought, well, maybe if we play a couple notes, the people started, and the firemen looked at us, one more note and you're going to jail.
Wow. Because
it was a serious situation in a club like that. And but the great thing about it was Dave stayed, and me, Steve, Greg, and our keyboard player, Brett, stayed. And we all went in the back room and hung out for about an hour or two, talking and hanging again like the old days. That was worth it to me.
Right, yeah.
So that right there, there's the photo that's posted is of us together is us backstage.
Oh, nice. So,
unfortunately, it didn't happen. And then I think a year or so later at the NAMM show, we were going to do it again. Unfortunately, Dave was out of town, so we had Jessica Soto to sing.
Right, yes.
He does a great David Lee Roth. He's a huge, huge Van Halen Dave fan.
Yeah.
So we did it like that, and that was cool. That's where we had that young lady you mentioned before.
Oh, Durga,
came up and did the monologue from the 7-Eleven video.
Yeah.
And then we played. It was quite wonderful. But
how close were you? I think we
were on stage ready to go.
Right, yeah.
There's a
curtain
in front of us.
Okay.
Dave, Mike, and Han, also me and Steve and Greg. And out of the side, that is an unusual stage. It's kind of an opening. I can see the people coming in from the front door, and I saw flashlights and fire helmets coming in. That can't be good. That's not a good thing. And that was the end of it.
Because wasn't it John 5 was playing earlier in the day or early in the night, right?
Is that correct? It might have.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know
it might have.
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge.
Næsen I sporet og pick up I rillen. Behind the vinyl på My Rock.
Say to yourself. bosses is a friend of hers, and this one will do just fine. So what do you say we go looking?
Oh, that's another thing. Well, I interviewed John Five this past summer, and he's got a record with Dave that isn't released yet.
Yeah.
He recorded a full album, apparently.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm on that record or not, because I did come and record something with John. It may have been for his solo record or something.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't want to start any stupid rumor.
No.
but I did
have
some interaction
right.
with John Five. Not with Dave necessarily.
Right, right.
Like that.
But. No, but what John said is, and he's told this story many times, that he came in, recorded all the guitars for that album, and then he was, because he was heading out on tour with Rob Zombie, I think, and he said he was really pressed for time. And then Dave said, okay, great, we're just going to lay down the drums for it. And I think the engineer said, but there's no click track or something. And Dave didn't get that. And then John had to, in just a couple of hours, re-record all his guitar parts again with the click or whatever it was. Yeah. But how did that work back then? I mean, and I don't know about click track. Was that something you used in the 80s?
No, I wasn't involved in that record.
Right.
I just know that I did. Was that with John Five in a studio for one thing? I don't
right,
know
yeah.
what it was. It may have been around that time.
Yeah.
And I later on when I heard about it, I thought maybe that was a song that Dave was using.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah. No, but stuff with click tracks. Because
you need to have everything on time to start
yeah.
with. Because you can't just add drums to a pre-recorded guitar, because the guitar follows the drums.
Right.
So if you can't have the drums follow the guitar.
Right.
I've done records where people tried to do that. It never works.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't do it.
So I got the feeling that was the whole thing with Dave, that John Five said, that he wanted to do it old school and stuff. And then I just wonder. But
old school is drums first. It's always drums
right,
first.
Right, yeah.
That's why sound check, it's drums first.
Right,
before
yeah,
you do
yeah.
the drums first.
Yeah.
Build everything on top, because that's your rhythmic pattern.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
everything goes on top
yeah.
of. You can't do guitars first.
Right, yeah.
Maybe somebody can, but maybe some grandmaster genius can. But it's still going to be tough, and it's not going to be very... It just doesn't work that way.
Right, right. Yeah.
And how did you feel playing with Greg Bissonette?
Greg is so awesome. What
yep.
a great drummer. Still one of my dearest friends in the world. One of my favorite people on earth. It's just a great, great... And we knew Greg was the guy. We did rehearsals for... auditions for drummers. There were about 40 or 50 guys show up. And guys would come in and we'd, you know, they'd play a little bit. And, pretty good, you know, the next one. The moment Greg walked in the room, we knew he was the guy.
Right.
Before he even sat down. And it's a weird kind of ESP thing that happens when you're choosing musicians. Sometimes you know right away, this is the guy. This is him. I know this is going to work. He walked in, was a ball of enthusiasm and positive and funny and laughing and hilarious. And we knew, because sometimes the hang is almost more important than your ability
yeah.
to play.
Yeah.
On top of it, he was an amazing drummer. And he sang, and it was just great, and so it worked out perfectly. Greg is just, and he was such a huge Beatles fan. He's just so into the Beatles, so much into the Beatles. And look what happened. Lo and behold, he ends up, he's drumming for Ringo.
Ringo stuff. Yeah.
So watch what you wish for, because you might just get it.
She kinda likes ya. Think quick, are you out of luck? This blind date is cashing. We have a winner for the big first prize. She's meeting in the Maurice. Going nowhere tonight. Shake it slowly. And do that bump and grind. Whoa. Rotate slowly. Make it bump and grind. Whoa.
it's funny, watch What You Wish For. Last night you were in Stockholm doing a clinic and you told a great story about when you were a kid, you used to look through a catalog. That's quite an amazing story. So
it's a true story.
Yeah. So you wished to either be you and your best friend, either be a professional fisherman
or a professional. We both wanted to be either in a band or be a or fish or be a fishing person somehow. And in the end, I got in the band, and sure enough, he ended up being a person who fished for a living, and he demonstrated sporting goods and fishing gear, and he was also a trick shot. You could throw a little, like a bottle cap into the air, and he would shoot it out of the air.
Oh, really?
It was a genius trick shot. So that became his life. So he got what he wanted, I got what I wanted. It was a beautiful thing.
I love it. I got a couple of questions. Eat 'em and smile, done? I got a couple of...
Just one more question about Eat 'em and smile. Because I sent a message to Durga McRoom, who had done, she did background vocals for Pink Floyd and so on. She said that around the time for Eat 'em and Smile, I think it was, that there was a listening session, and she got the job walking around in really high heels with two little people on leash handing out flyers or something. Do you know anything about that?
There may have been a listening party. Yeah. Dave didn't invite me.
No.
But Dave would do a cool thing once in a while. He'd have a cassette of one of the songs, and he'd be in his office. We had an office right on Sunset Boulevard, and like the cleaning crew would come in. And usually, you know, Mexican guys, you know, doing labor, you know, doing their thing. And Dave would say, you know, and he spoke a little rudimentary Spanish.
Right.
I'd start to talk with him. I said, could you listen to a song? I want to know what you think. And he'd kind of test market it on people who work for a living.
Right.
You know, who are real people. Not studio executives or record company people. And I thought that was brilliant. And he, you know, they'd, oh, Dave, we love it. It's great. You know, and they would dig it completely. And that was his test marketing. I thought that was charming and brilliant.
Love it. Actually, speaking of Spanish, you also recorded the album in Spanish, and that was your idea, right?
It was my idea. Later on, the fact that it was my idea got taken from me by some of the people around Dave that I mentioned before. Of course, it was their idea.
Yeah.
But I remember coming home from New York City on the plane and reading that in Latin countries, some like 80% of the population is below the age of 25.
Right.
We gotta get in on this. And I knew Dave spoke Spanish. I go, why don't we do the record in Spanish? It'd be so cool. And so we went, and Dave and I actually went, and we just sang over the same tracks again. And he took me in to do the harmonies. It's just me and Dave singing on that. And we sang in a studio that Missing Persons was in during the day. And then we would go into the night. And I was singing at Dale Bozzio's mic, the female singer. And I had her lipstick and perfume and makeup all over it. And it smelled divine. I was woo, because she was a hot babe. And so we ended up doing it. I had to do it phonetically because I don't know Spanish. So he would just tell me how to pronounce whatever. And then he'd do it. He had to adjust some of the lyrics, too, because he was concerned that, especially in Mexico, it's more of a Catholic country, and it's a little bit more conservative.
Right.
So you don't want to have lewd lyrics on there.
Right.
Next thing you know, it'll get a little sticker on it that says, don't buy it. You know. So he tamed some of it down a little bit. But every time I go into South America and into Mexico, people got that record, and they're all excited and freaked out about it.
Well, that was so fun as well, because the Spanish title doesn't mean Eat 'em and Smile. It's something else.
Sonrisa Salvaje.
I don't know what it is. I can't remember. But it doesn't mean that.
And shy boy was timido for timid.
Right.
Timido, hasta luego. I don't know what that means either. Vuelto loco, el calor. I'm going crazy from the heat.
Yeah.
You know, so pretty wild.
Oh, great stuff.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high on Monday. Shot down in May. But stomping on a dream.
roll myself up in a big ball and fly.
So obviously now you're with you're juggling a few balls at the moment. Sons of Apollo,
yeah,
you've got
Sons
going
of,
on.
Sons of Apollo and Winery Dogs, are my two main yep. main things.
Yeah, yep.
I'm also doing a solo record with Ray Lugier, who played with Dave for years.
Oh, oh right, he's with Korn now.
Right, yeah, we got a lot of great Dave stories, yeah. And it was just hilarious stuff that he went through. Also, it was great times.
Well, he was in that band. It was Ray when he was with David Lee Roth. Ray James Lomenzo.
I think he might have been.
As well was in that.
Right, yeah,
I can't remember the guitar player. I think he might have been a Japanese guitar player.
Oh, no, that was... Bart Walsh was played in the Van Halen copy band, and Dave brought him in.
Right. Oh, yeah, from the... Wasn't it the Atomic Punks or something? Yeah, right. Yeah.
Great
yeah.
player.
Yeah.
Really cool. Yeah, and I didn't know much about Dave at that time, because I was off doing my thing. And I remember at one point there was a party at one of the guys' house of one of our crew guys that everybody knew. And so Dave showed up at the party. And Dave usually is on script, and he knows what's happening. And not much happens by chance. It looks like it's by chance, but it's cool. So he happened to be there when I was there, and I hadn't spoken to him since I left the band. So, you know, people were looking around at what's going to happen. And but it was a party. It was fun, cool. And Dave graciously came over to me and said, "Man, I'm so proud of you, because Mr. Big just had a number one single
right.
and platinum record, and we were just doing great." And he just came over, "Man, I'm so proud of you. I'm so glad you did well." And I had to say to him, "Man, I couldn't have done it without you. You know, without you getting me into the situation I was in, I couldn't have launched what I did." It was a really wonderful moment where we could, you know, just be total friends again. Because we left, we were upset with each other, of course, whenever you break up. No,
right.
It's your fault. No, it's your fault. And that kind of thing happened. But soon after, I cooled off, and he did too. And I just have great respect for him. And he was very kind to me in that situation.
Cool.
Great, very cool. So you got Winery Dogs, Mike Portnoy. You're obviously playing
with. Yeah, Mike is in both bands.
Exactly.
And I'm in both bands. Winery Dogs, I love the band. I grew up in a three-piece band. Richie Kotzen is singing and playing guitar like a grandmaster. He's a superstar. His voice is just so great. And his songwriting is so awesome. And we just have a great time with that. Very easy. Three guys on a tour bus is so easy. It's way easier.
Yeah.
Sons of Apollo is a little bit more proggy. And I'm dear friends with everybody in the band. I love them. Bumblefoot, Jeff Scott Soto, and Derek Sherina. We have a great time. But it's a little bit more of a... We have fun on stage, but it's a little bit more serious, proggy music.
Right.
As opposed to the straight-up rock and blues that Winery Dogs is.
Yeah.
And so it's two different things. But it's a blast. And I'm very, very grateful that I got some of no band.
And you're still juggling Mr. Big as well, right?
Yeah, we don't know what's going to happen with Mr. Big. Sadly, we lost our drummer, Pat.
Yeah.
And we went out without him a little bit to just honor our commitments that we had already had. But it's tough without him. Yeah. So we're going to give it a rest and see what happens. And we're all still very much dear friends and have a lot of love and respect for each other. We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll go out again. I'd love to. I'd love to do more Mr. Big at some point. Understanding that it takes a little time to heal that wound and go out. And we also didn't want to just go out and be one of those bands that the only thing original is the logo.
Yeah.
And everybody on stage you never saw it before. You know, so and no fault to them. You got to do what you got to do to
right.
a living and make you do what you're doing. That's perfectly fine. But we wanted to keep the integrity of the band as solid as possible. So
right.
hopefully we'll go out and do something again at some point.
Right.
Cool.
And we'll finish on this. Do you really understand your impact you've had on the bass?
Well, I don't know. I hope if it's been positive and good. We did a clinic here. You were there last night, and it was jam-packed. And I'm so pleased to see people from Stockholm come out. And I love to help my fellow musicians, so giving whatever advice I can to move people along and have them play better or know the business better or know what to do in a situation, I love that. So that kind of impact, I'm very, very excited to exert to my fellow musician to try and help them along. That's important to me.
And you just seem... seem like you're more in love with the bass these days than ever, you know?
For some reason. Yeah. It's going better.
Yeah.
We're hearing an announcement in the background, ladies and gentlemen. I apologize. We're in a hotel lobby, and we'll try to speak over this. Yeah. But yeah, I love bass more than ever, and I practice more now than I ever have.
Love it. Perfect. I think cool. That's our cue to end it up.
Good place to stop.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time,
gentlemen,
man.
Thank you so much. And thanks for your interest in Edom and Smile, and I appreciate you speaking with me today.
Når man har vendt pladen, og sidste nummer er spillet, så er Behind the Vinyl slut. Tough Luck. Darren og Niklas er tilbage næste søndag kl. 16 med endnu et klassisk album. Og indtil da kan du fange denne og alle de forrige episoder som podcast på radioplay.dk/myrock. Adios.